think my woulda dead or in a jail, but
I'm not living with this one, you see. It's all about next week, same place, same time, you see. Roger Moore, love on. Whatever you do, do good. Be good and be safe, for the seat.
Just me, myself, and I on my shadow.
Yeah, I tell you.
Light so. It's the darkest time for me. Light so. My two eyes.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is there is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the September edition of Labor Radio. This is your host, Mustafa Henaway, always joined with the co-host,
Stefan Doucette. Thanks for joining us today. We got, I'm in Montreal, Mustafa's in Lebanon. We're doing some major international journalism today for you. Do you want to introduce the interview that we're doing today, Moose?
So today's focus on Labor Radio is the struggles of migrant workers, and particularly the struggles of undocumented and precarious migrant workers. So we'll be doing interviews with Gaurav Sharma, who's the spokesperson and community organizer at the Immigrant Workers Center, but as well as Mamadou Konaté, who we've talked about before on this show, who is who was an essential worker working in a CHLSD and is now facing deportation at the end of September. Also, hopefully we're going to also have some audio from the Migrant Rights Network National Conference, because the government is expected to announce soon their mass regularization program of undocumented and other migrant workers in Canada. So it's a significant moment.
Totally. Just a note that in Montreal, there's a demonstration sort of accompanying this press conference, but that demonstration is on Sunday the 18th.
At 2 p.m. at Square Victoria.
There you go. That's the piece I was missing. So if you're listening to this live on Thursday, just know that the demonstration is a few days away. You have time to prepare for and find out about it and attend. Before we get to the interview, I wanted to touch still on a few pieces of labor news. Notably, I mean, we've talked about it on the show before, but the Rolls-Royce workers on the West Island have gone back to work. And I mean, it was a significant struggle. It lasted since March until now in September, so around 6 months long lockout. I don't need to go over the whole story, because those of you who listen to the show will have heard us talk about it before, but some things that I think are worth pointing out about the conditions under which they're returning to work. So first of all, they agreed to the contract at 62%, so that's fairly low margin of majority in terms of accepting the contract. Another thing that wasn't clear in the press from this agreement was that the entire executive of the union recommended voting against the agreement. And let me tell you why. This is an 8-year agreement, which is extremely long, especially given the current context of inflation, where we don't know what's going to happen to prices in the next 8 years. Not to mention, the struggle was sort of centered around the two-tier pension system. That system is untouched. So they completely lost that battle over the course of the 6-month lockout. they're trying to save face, I guess, in a certain way, by talking about how there's going to be negotiations ongoing about issues within the workplace. But all this to say, I'm giving the numbers off the top of my head, I think it's 24% increase over 8 years. So that's going to be wiped out within 2 years for inflation, possibly. And anyway, I don't want to just bash this agreement, or I don't want it to come across as bashing the workers who accepted it. Obviously, they've been locked out for 6 months, probably surviving on a tenth of what they normally make. And clearly the negotiations didn't go well. You can understand why people would say, you know what, screw it. Let's just sign this and go back to work, because it's not going anywhere. But there's a lot of things that you could say about this, and I think one of them is that a local of 300 some odd workers in Montreal going up against Rolls-Royce, like a company that's deep in the arms industry, obviously super deep pockets. This is the reality of workers going up against multinational corporations in the age of imperialism. And it's a tough battle. The private sector is pretty insane. So just got to take note of that, I guess.
Yeah, and it's good that they're willing to that they were willing to put workers on lockup for so long just to be able to give them so easily. They could have probably saved if they kept production going and gave the demands, but
this sort of ideological battle that employers now are pursuing. It's kind of clear it's no longer about profitability. It's no longer about accessing, you know, cheaply. I mean, it's clear it's an ideological battle about we're going to control the workplace, that we're going to try to crush unions however we can, right? But so to withstand 6 months of lockout, it's still an impressive feat despite the end result.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, they don't need to look far. In Joliette, there's a 15-month lockout with a company that I would say is significantly shallower pockets than Rolls-Royce. So, you know, anyway, that the specter of a even longer lockout would kind of make someone think twice about pursuing this. Anyway, depressing, sobering, and ultimately just sort of reflects the current rapport de force in Quebec between particularly private sector workers and the big companies that they often work for.
So yeah. I think also, I mean, one lesson which maybe kind of hurts us, but I mean, it's also, you know, what role beyond, you know, that it's clear that, like, you know, if there was more solidarity, you know, even if they couldn't extend it, you know, that labor activists should have extended their solidarity more, could have helped apply pressure on Rolls-Royce, right? But kind of also shows the need for kind of real unity around these struggles, because for employers, obviously they have their unity, right? So now, you know, employers will say, hey, look what happened to Rolls-Royce. You want the same thing to happen to you? So it's clear that they use it for themselves. So we have to find ways of finding our unity across some of these struggles.
Yeah. And I mean, it just makes you think about the current sort of, you know, speaking with some comrades the other day, you know, about how the law is sort of like an expression of where the balance of forces is at between capital and labor at any point in time. And currently, the way that it is in Quebec, like, you basically have no right to strike, right? It's so limited. And so the expressions of labor solidarity are so restricted. I mean, what can a different workplace do to support these workers? They can basically give them money, show up to their picket line to say hi. It's very, very different than in a context where you can generalize the struggle across different workplaces. Anyway, the
sympathy strikes,
political strikes. Anyway, just the right to strike in general is just so, so, so restricted here. I mean, it's not a coincidence, but it reflects really the balance of forces. So, I mean, you know, then it just brings up the question: how do you reverse that trend in the balance of forces? How do you, you know, incrementally increase the power of labor over capital so that this type of situation evolves differently in the future? I mean, that's the question we're always asking, essentially. This is another,
that's what we do at the show.
Yeah. it's the question. But anyway, so that's that for Rolls-Royce. I mean, they they're back at work. I think they went back this week, so I mean, solidarity to them. They despite going back in on some major concessions and that they won't be able to negotiate again for almost 8 years, they hopefully have learned a lot from this. I'm sure that they have, and I just hope it doesn't lead to despair, but rather to preparation and solidarity.
No, and I mean, despite some of the more exciting, you know, the strikes against inflation in the UK that we've seen, you know, recently, or, you know, what's happening in the US, this, I mean, it's this ideological, I mean, it's really, it's just class warfare. and it's in the open now, right? And so, I mean, you know, despite, I think the, it's how do we learn from it and how do we go forward, you know, and how do we push, you know, inside the unions to, you know, there are moments that you just got to take those legal risks, right? It can't, we can't play by the rules anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of playing by the rules, I think, and just about the sort of international context of reaction and labor within that, I'm pretty sure that in Ukraine, they just passed a law like that essentially illegalizes unions. Or makes it so that they can barely operate. And so, I mean, the inflation is one context, and then war is another one. And the way that war is a hammer blow to labor, obviously in Ukraine, but also here, shouldn't escape us, I guess, when we want to take stock of the sort of more global situation. Anyways, maybe we should go to the interview.
Yeah, and but before we move on to the interview, just to give a bit of a context of, I mean, you know, in a what will hopefully be uplifting news, you know, that for nearly the 1.7 million people in Canada who live with precarious status, international students, temporary foreign workers, refugee claimants, and, you know, the 500,000 undocumented workers, you know, who, you know, we've talked about before, who are working as domestic workers or who are working under the agricultural worker program or who are working in large manufacturing such as Ollie Mill, or Dollarama, are finally, you know, who've had always their ability to organize, their ability to stand up for their labor rights, stifled by their own immigration status, are finally going to see, hopefully, the ability to actually to gain their permanent residency and to have, you know, not just full equality, but hopefully give workers or this section of the working class some confidence to actually start organizing also in their workplaces. So, you know, what was rumor has come out, you know, the Toronto Star, you know, officially was able to get a source from the government that, that this year, you know, Trudeau, wants to build on the legacy of his own father, and implement a mass regularization program. The details aren't out yet, but supposedly it will be broad. Obviously there's politicking, obviously there's attempts to outdo the conservatives to secure what would be a new layer of immigrant vote. There's obviously the labor shortage question, but I think also, you know, it's also a question of the struggles of the last two decades, right, of migrant workers and the migrant communities. So so there's the attempt now, you know, by groups such as the Migrant Workers Network, Migrant Rights Network, Solidarity Across Borders, the Immigrant Worker Centers, to actually to push as much as we can to make sure that it's broad, that it's not like the Guardian Angel program or the other essential worker programs that were really restrictive and were only going to give a pathway to permanent residency to those groups that were already going to access it. So there's been a Pan-Canadian Day of Action that's been called, as we talked about before, September the 18th at 2 p.m. At Square Victoria. Some of the major unions have already endorsed the call for full regularization. CSN, Unifor, also the Canadian Labour Congress is supporting the call. So, you know, it's clearly a labor question. So, and you know, that's focusing on it this month. So please do enjoy the interview and you know, and the audio of migrant workers themselves and why they need for full regularization, because it's going to be a big boost to the labor movement in the future, when people are going to feel the ability to actually to organize and no longer have you know, the fear of deportation hanging over them in these large private sector employers. So
absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, in case like people are sort of not seeing the link between this and labor, I mean, obviously, like people talk about migrant workers, people tend to tack on the word worker. But anyone who's not in a position of like regular status, I mean, it just doesn't happen to people who aren't members of the working class. So in that sense, I just want to make it clear that it's like, it's a class issue 100% through and through. And that's why it makes sense for class organizations to treat it as such. Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed the interview. A few things to say before that. You can always catch us every third Thursday of the month. We forgot to say this at the top of the show. I'm just going to do some quick housekeeping here. Third Thursday of the month, 5 to 6 p.m. on 90.3 FM in Montreal. Also online, ckut.ca. We also post the episodes on our Mixcloud, which you can find by finding us on Facebook, Labor Radio. And we're also on the Labor Radio Podcast Network, where you can find other labor-related shows from around the world, most of the U.S., but also other places. So make sure you check out their website to support them. And without further ado, here's our interview.
So just a quick editor's note. After recording the initial introduction, Mustafa was supposed to interview the folks he just spoke about. Then since he's in Lebanon, the internet and power, the electricity went out for a number of hours, until which point he was no longer able to kind of conduct those interviews. So what we have decided to include in their place is audio from the press conference, which was held today, September 14th, by the Migrant Rights Network. So you'll hear about half an hour from that press conference, speakers from a variety of organizations across the country, and also some undocumented workers, also members of organizations, speaking about the regularization program and the proposals put forward by the undocumented workers movement. So I hope you enjoyed that instead of the planned interviews, and we're sorry about the technical difficulties, and you can blame imperialism for that one, as usual. Thanks for listening.
Oh là là, vendeux, voilà les Batman, voilà les Bakke. Oh là là, décalons moins de. Voilà la Bakke, elle embarque les Batman, mais ne tape pas que. 22, des mamans plaquées. Talonnade 22, appelez le baveux, oh la loi en queue. Oh là là, oh là là, oh là là, oh là là, 22. Oh là là, 22, voilà les Batman, voilà les Bakke.
4 petits cramés dans la mécane. Oh là là, c'est les Bakke, c'est les guettins. 22, deux plaques ou deux tampons en bécane. Oh là là, ils se prennent pour des sauveurs comme Negan. 22, cours plus vite que les balles. Oh là là, oh là là, faut jeter les bails. 22, pas traiter d'égal à égal. Oh my god, ils peuvent t'allumer, ouais, c'est légal. 22, y'a des massas, y'a du tete. Pas les Pokia, même la Bakke. Que tu détailles sous la bête. Fallait passer ça en testeuse. Y'a les Hnoucha, ouais, y'a les bleus. Y'a les méchants, y'a les que deux. Y'a les coupables, ouais, y'a les keufs. Y'a les 22, y'a les fuckers.
22, oh là là, 22.
Good afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for being here. My name is Syed Hassan, S-Y-E-D, last name H-U-S-S-A-N, and I'm the Executive Director of the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change and a member of the Migrant Rights Network Secretariat. We're here today united in our call to Prime Minister Trudeau and Parliament to swiftly and finally introduce fair rules to ensure equal rights for 1.7 million migrants. At this point, there's almost no one in the country who's not aware of the immense exploitation and abuse faced by migrants. Whether it is migrant farm workers in Canada who are living, according to a recent letter by Jamaican farm workers, in systems of systemic exploitation and slavery. At least three farm workers have died in a single week in August this year, unable to protect themselves because they lack permanent immigration status. Similarly, we are all well aware that migrant domestic workers living in their employer-provided homes are underpaid and exploited. In 2021, at least eight international students in Canada killed themselves because of the stress of high tuition fees and low wages trapped by immigration rules. Many asylum seekers in Canada remain in limbo for years. Over 40% of in-country claimants are rejected by an exclusionary system. Most migrants, including farm workers, domestic workers, current and former international students, and refugees, have no meaningful access to permanent residency. And permanent residency is not just about whether you live here or leave. It's about access to basic rights. Whether it's universal healthcare, education, being able to speak up against abusive employers or landlords, or being with your family, without permanent residency, migrants simply don't have the power to protect themselves. Today, we're not asking for charity. We are demanding equality. Most temporary migrants, whether work, study, or refugee claimants, most temporary permits, whether they are work permits, study permits, or refugee permits, are the only gateway to Canada for low-wage racialized people. And they're also a path off a cliff. At one point or the other, permits expire and cannot be replaced. The only choice, which is no choice at all, is living in Canada without any status or returning to a country that you may not be able to live in. Whether it's to escape war or poverty or discrimination or climate catastrophe, or whether it's because you formed relationships and community or attachment here, many people make the difficult decision to live here without immigration papers. As a result, there are at least 500,000 people in Canada without any immigration status. Today, you'll hear from three of them who will explain what it is like to live here without status. These issues are not new, and in fact, the solutions are quite simple. Full and permanent immigration status for each and every person in the country. A fair society is one with equal rights, and that's only possible when everyone has the same permanent immigration status. For undocumented migrants, the mechanism for that is a comprehensive and inclusive regularization program. Regularization means giving permanent rights to undocumented people, that is, people failed by Canada's immigration system and who as a result have lost their immigration status should be given permanent residency. It is common enough around the world. Ireland just wrapped up a program in the first 6 months of this year, and Ecuador is beginning one soon. In the last 20 years, 23 out of the 26 member nations of the European Union have had regularization programs. Prime Minister Trudeau has shown that he's ready to do the right thing. And for the first time in half a century, Canada is moving forward on a real regularization program for undocumented migrants. We are all here to insist that absolutely each and every undocumented person should be included. No one should be left behind. Equality is equality, and there can be no exceptions. All exceptions are discrimination. Over the last 2 years of COVID-19, there have been numerous programs that have been small and exclusionary, and those that have given temporary pathways instead of immediate permanent residency. The current government must learn from the resounding failures of these programs to address the problem. We don't need small and temporary pathways. We need comprehensive and inclusive regularization. Only then will we even begin to address the crisis that is in front of us. Over 500,000 people in the country are undocumented because of the failures of immigration policy. Prime Minister Trudeau now has the historic opportunity to begin to correct these wrongs and be remembered for ensuring equal rights for these members of our society. There is cross-country support for doing the right thing. Over 480 organizations have signed on to our call for full and permanent immigration status for all. Today, you will hear from a few of them. Not only is this the right thing to do, it is the smart thing to do. More of us are working now than ever before, but prices are high and the fears of recession loom large. regularizing 500,000 undocumented people will immediately increase employer contributions by at least $1.1 billion. And as 1.7 million people lay down deeper roots, they will build our communities at a time when it matters most. The next parliament must not wait. Comprehensive and inclusive regularization now. Thank you. Up next, we're going to hear from Caroline Michael, who is a Nigerian undocumented refugee who works as a healthcare worker in Toronto and is a member of Migrant Workers Alliance for Change. Caroline?
And my challenges as a refugee claimant and then as an undocumented person in Canada has been a horrific, terrible, stressful, painful and tearful situation. Everything I applied for was denied, from my hearing to my humanitarian and compassionate application, with non-refundable application fees. And the lawyer's fees were very expensive too. Each application I filed, I was charged for it. And it the total I paid was over $12,000 in lawyer fees alone. I was even scammed by my first lawyer, where he charged me over $3,300 and he never did anything. Soon after he suddenly died, I found out through my member of parliament that he had never filed any application for me, and that he was not even a lawyer. That was the end of my money and everything. This has been the hardest thing in my life as a human being to go through. I cannot even properly explain it to you in words. And most of the challenges for undocumented people in Canada is that we don't have access to basic needs, like healthcare. For example, one day I wasn't feeling well while I was still waiting for a refugee decision. I went to my local working clinic and I was asked to pay $20 to register and then $50 to see the doctor. Even though I was supposed to be covered under the interim federal health program, I refused to pay it. And then I went to another working clinic. But because I was sick, I had no choice but to pay the $50 fee to see the doctor. This was a very high amount for me, but I had to pay. This is completely unfair. Our healthcare should not be tied up to our immigration status. Now that I am undocumented, I don't even have interim federal health coverage. I am scared of falling sick right now. Because of all my experiences as a migrant, it has really affected my mental health, in one way or the other. I've become depressed, and for the last 2 days, my eyes has refused to close. I cannot sleep anymore. I cannot even think of seeing other people because I feel mentally trapped. One of the painful aspects is that there are times I feel like maybe I don't want to do my job right now anymore. But if I don't have permanent resident status, there are few jobs I can do as an undocumented person here in Canada. Before I became undocumented, I was accepted into Seneca College and Friendship College. But I had to defile my education. I had to defile my dreams because of my status. Everything has been aborted. I am just being held captive. I can't even take a week off my job and go traveling to somewhere to have some rest. I am held bound like someone in a prison. This has been my last 4 years here in Canada. I am standing here with others to demand justice for myself and every other undocumented immigrants in Canada. Because we're working, even during the pandemic, we're all out there working. And we're working for the growth of this nation, of this country, Canada, for the well-being of the Canadian senior citizens, people with disabilities, and special needs. Myself and others, we're out during all the waves of the pandemic, and we're still working for the development of Canada. But we are not robots. We are humans. We are all human beings. So I, with others, are here to let the next parliament, MPs, Prime Minister Trudeau, and Immigration Minister Sean Fraser, to hear our voices, that we refuse to suffer any longer and demand status for all. And we're demanding this status for all with no conditions, no exception, and no one should be left out. Thank you very much. That's my speech for today.
Merci beaucoup, beaucoup, Caroline. Thank you so much, Caroline, for your courage in speaking out and those strong words. Maintenant, nous avons avec nous Madame Penelope Baudreau, la directrice des opérations nationales et elle-même une infirmière dans la clinique médicale des personnes sans papiers de Médecins du Monde à Montréal. Après, sa collègue Chloé Sebron va prendre la relais. Elle est conseillère principale de plaidoyer pour MDM et sera disponible pour les questions par la suite. Penelope?
Thank you so much, Caroline. Médecins du Monde est vraiment fier de se joindre aux paroles aujourd'hui puis aux batailles qui sont livrées par les personnes migrantes à statut précaire à Montréal tous les jours. Donc, merci beaucoup pour cette invitation.
Penelope, si vous pouvez parler très lentement pour les interprètes. Merci.
Tous les jours, des personnes migrantes à statut précaire comme Caroline se présentent à la clinique médicale de Médecins du Monde car elles n'ont pas accès à une couverture médicale. Mais en réalité, le vrai problème, c'est que leur statut n'est pas régularisé. Je parle de femmes enceintes, de personnes âgées avec des maladies chroniques, des femmes victimes de violences conjugales, des personnes qui vivent au Canada, qui souvent travaillent et contribuent au développement de la société québécoise. Des personnes qui n'ont pas accès aux soins en raison de leur statut migratoire précaire. C'est un fardeau supplémentaire qui a un impact direct sur leur santé physique et mentale. De l'anxiété, de la dépression, de l'isolement, de la perte d'estime de soi. Elles ont traversé un parcours migratoire déjà traumatisant, puis elles arrivent ici et la bataille est loin d'être terminée. La complexité du système d'immigration les met encore plus à risque. Les personnes migrantes se présentent à notre clinique à Montréal. La première étape est de voir comment on va pouvoir les aider à régulariser leur situation. Comment nous pouvons leur donner accès à une couverture médicale? Le système migratoire est extrêmement complexe, puis nos intervenantes sociales sont spécialisées pour essayer de comprendre. Ça prend beaucoup de temps et une expertise extrêmement pointue pour démêler tout ça. Trop souvent, les gens ils tombent dans les mailles du filet. Il est démontré que la précarité du statut migratoire est l'un des facteurs clés de la précarité économique, sociale, mais aussi un indicateur de moins bonne santé. En tant qu'organisation médicale humanitaire, Médecins du Monde soutient les demandes pour la mise en œuvre d'un programme de régularisation sûr, complet et inclusif à travers le Canada. Médecins du Monde aborde la santé dans une vision globale, ce qui inclut toutes les sphères de la santé d'une personne. C'est pourquoi on reconnaît l'effort de nos partenaires pour la régularisation du statut pour toutes et tous. C'est un facteur qui est la santé. Le droit à la santé est un droit internationalement reconnu et protégé. La régularisation du statut est un outil essentiel pour garantir les droits fondamentaux des personnes migrantes et favoriser le bien-être d'une société dans son ensemble. C'est une vision que Médecins du Monde défend partout dans le monde. Il est important de faire front commun pour la protection des droits humains et l'accès aux services essentiels pour toutes et tous au Canada. La première prescription que nous voulons faire aux personnes qui fréquentent notre clinique médicale, c'est la régularisation de leur statut. Je vous remercie encore beaucoup pour cette invitation.
Thank you, Penelope, for those words and for your solidarity. Next, we're going to hear from Danilo De Leon, who's an undocumented migrant leader from Edmonton, and he is the chairperson of Migrante Canada. Danilo, please take it away.
Good day to all our media people here, and thank you for attending this important press conference. My name is Danilo De Leon. I live in Edmonton, Alberta. I am an undocumented worker. I was scheduled to be deported. My deportation was scheduled on August 29, 24 hours before the schedule of my removal. I received a news from a federal court through my lawyer that my removal was deferred. It was a sigh of relief, but I felt like I was in a death row waiting to be hung, just waiting for a miracle. I'm not out of the woods. I'm still fighting for my status in Canada. Like many others, we came here in Canada to work because Canada needs workers. We're more than just workers that feed Canada's economy. We are human beings that have the right to live in Canada with dignity. We are here to demand to be regularized. Life has been rough since I became undocumented. Like many others, access to services and healthcare was hard to get. I work in many abusive employers before I got better employers where I work now. Non-payment of correct wage, being yelled at, long hours, and no respect are often my issues and many undocumented issues in the workplace. During the height of COVID, many undocumented from my community lost their jobs and no access to social services. They have nothing to eat. Our health was threatened. My daughter just graduated nursing a month ago. I haven't seen her since 2013. My daughters are the reason why I continue to sacrifice being far from them and fighting for my status. I want to be reunited with them in Canada so they will have a better future. This is why I am here before you to tell the next parliament to ensure permanent residency status for each one of every undocumented person and migrant. We cannot wait. Make status for all a priority now. No one should be excluded. We need a regularization program that do not discriminate. We need a human regularization program, not for your chosen few, but for all. A permanent resident status for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Danilo, for your strong words. You're always so inspiring. Now I'd love to invite Nina Gonzalez to unmute and speak. Nina, if you can speak slowly for the translation, that's going to help. Nina's the coordinator of the Immigrant Workers Center Regularization Campaign, and she's active in their Women's Committee and is herself non-status.
Bonjour. Nina. Je m'appelle Nina. Je ne sais pas si vous voulez écouter bien, ça comprend? Oui? Non? Est-ce que c'est bien? Non, en premier, je voudrais dire merci à toutes les personnes qui sont là, à mes camarades sans status, à tous les organismes. Et voilà. Je m'appelle Nina. Je suis membre du Centre de travailleurs et travailleuses immigrantes, particulièrement active au comité des femmes. Alors, que nous sommes en période électorale au Québec, les partis politiques ne parlent pas du nombre d'immigrés en ignorant la réalité concrète, surtout l'importance du statut de migration. Les personnes sans statut sont obligées à vivre dans l'isolement, dans la peur, avec des graves problèmes de santé et des abus de discrimination sur les lieux de travail, pour l'accès au logement, pour l'accès aux soins de santé. Ça fait des années que nous sommes dans ces conditions. C'est pourquoi un programme de régularisation est non seulement nécessaire et urgent, mais il permettrait également de rendre justice à tant des années d'injustice et d'abus. Nous, les personnes sans statut, nous contribuons de toutes les manières à cette société. Pour finaliser, nous voulons que le Québec participe dans le programme de régularisation proposé par le gouvernement fédéral. Et nous voulons un programme large, inclusif et permanent. Nous voulons exercer notre droit en toute liberté et sécurité en tant que les travailleurs et travailleuses. Nous voulons la reconnaissance de notre travail. Nous voulons l'accès à la compensation pour les accidents du travail, les maladies et les maladies professionnelles. Notre système de migration entraîne systématiquement des personnes sans statut d'immigration, soit en conséquence un rejet de demande d'asile ou à cause de l'aspiration d'un permis de travail, pour lequel l'employeur peut refuser la prolongation. La perte de statut, c'est un problème administratif imposé par le système, ce n'est pas un acte criminel. Nous méritons un statut les autres personnes ici au Canada. Nous avons le valeur, tenemos valeur, tenemos derecho y juntos luchamos por nuestra causa. Estatus para todos y todas. Gracias. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Nina. Gracias, Nina.
Thank you so much, Nina. That was incredible. Thank you so much for your words. Up next, we're going to hear from Lauren, who is the executive director of Oxfam Canada.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Caroline, Nina, and Danilo. That was fantastic to hear from you. Oxfam is a global movement working in 90 countries to end poverty and injustice. And our work is grounded in human rights, driven by diversity and anti-racism, and rooted in feminist approaches. Around the world, we stand with migrants and refugees who are fighting for their rights and face discrimination, hostility, and violence. We proudly stand in solidarity with the 500,000 people living in Canada today without a valid immigration status.
Lauren, I'm sorry to interrupt. Just from our interpreters, if you can slow down. Thank you very much.
These people contribute so much to our society and economy, and are helping build the Canada of tomorrow, and yet face exploitation, abuse, and fear. Everyone in Canada deserves to live in dignity with access to basic rights and services. As a feminist organization committed to advancing gender equality and women's rights, we at Oxfam are calling on the government to move forward with a comprehensive and inclusive regularization program that leaves no one behind. A partial or exclusionary program would leave out the most marginalized undocumented women in this country. I'm thinking, for example, of the 25,000 migrant caregivers, the majority of whom are racialized women, who provide support to Canadian families and yet face some of the worst cases of exploitation and abuse. Working in people's homes and out of sight makes them particularly vulnerable to abuse, and yet they have few avenues to claim their rights and seek support. During the pandemic, 1 in 3 of these caregivers lost their jobs, and yet they couldn't access income supports. We as a society ask these women to care for our loved ones and yet reward them with poverty wages and a precarious status. I'm also thinking of the women who have escaped conflict and war and often arrive in Canada alone with their kids. These women are the sole breadwinners for their families and are determined to keep their children safe and fed. Yet without status, they don't have access to essential supports like the Canada Child Benefit or subsidized daycare. It is virtually impossible to work and provide for your children under such conditions. The strain these women face are unimaginable. The Canadian government has committed to advancing gender equality, fighting racism, and building an inclusive economy, and has taken many important steps forward in recent years. An inclusive regularization program that provides status for all would be a triple win. It would advance gender equality by securing rights and economic opportunities for some of the most marginalized women in our communities. It would help bolster our economy in these uncertain times by giving undocumented people the opportunity to apply for jobs in the many sectors that are facing labor shortages. And it would make an immediate dent in the inequality gap that has been rising in Canada. We at Oxfam have seen the positive impact that regularization programs have had in some of the countries in which we work. A comprehensive and inclusive program has not only proven to be possible, but to have real social and economic benefits for the countries who have been sufficiently bold and visionary to take this step to right injustice. We at Oxfam are very proud to support the principles for a comprehensive regularization program as set out by the Migrant Rights Network. And we thank you for your leadership.
Merci beaucoup pour votre solidarité. Thank you so much for your solidarity, Lauren. Strong words, and let's hope they're heard. Maintenant, nous avons avec nous Madame Laurence Gouinette, qui est la coordinatrice de la Ligue des droits et libertés ici au Québec. Laurence.
Bonjour. Oui, alors la Ligue des droits et libertés, c'est un organisme qui, depuis 1963, donc depuis 60 ans déjà, travaille à faire connaître, défendre et promouvoir tous les droits humains qui sont reconnus, notamment dans la Charte internationale des droits de l'homme. Et ça fait plusieurs années que la Ligue des droits et libertés soutient cette campagne en faveur de la régularisation de toutes les personnes sans statut ou à statut précaire. Je vais passer rapidement, je ne répéterai pas tous les exemples de droits humains qui sont violés, bafoués en raison de la précarité des statuts. On a entendu plusieurs exemples depuis le début de la conférence de presse, allant du droit à la santé, au droit à l'éducation, passant même par le droit à la vie. Mais quelque chose que ça nous fait remarquer, c'est que les droits humains sont vraiment interdépendants. Donc, en négligeant de régulariser le statut de toutes et de tous, on entraîne des violations de droits humains pour ces personnes. Et ce caractère d'interdépendance des droits peut aussi nous faire réaliser à quel point, en régularisant les statuts de toutes ces personnes, on peut changer radicalement des milliers de vies ici assez rapidement en les améliorant. Une autre caractéristique des droits humains qu'il faut vraiment se rappeler, c'est qu'ils sont universels. Donc, cette universalité des droits, ça signifie hors de tout doute que tous les êtres humains jouissent des mêmes droits du seul fait de l'humanité et indépendamment de leur statut ou de toute autre caractéristique. Et là, je cite le Haut Commissariat des Nations Unies pour les droits humains. Donc, ce caractère universel ne doit jamais être oublié quand le Canada met en place des politiques migratoires. Donc, le Canada, ça fait des décennies, semble-t-il, qui se félicite et s'applaudit de son rôle de pionnier, de promoteur des droits humains à travers le monde, sur la scène internationale. Mais les droits humains, ça ne peut pas se limiter à être seulement un discours. Le Canada a le devoir et la responsabilité de s'assurer que les droits de chacun et chacune sont respectés. Et évidemment, le Canada a aussi la responsabilité de ne pas violer lui-même les droits des personnes. Donc, la Ligue des droits et libertés appuie la revendication et exige que le gouvernement mette en place un programme de régularisation qui octroierait un statut complet et permanent pour toutes les personnes qui ont un statut précaire au Québec et au Canada, qui serait un programme de régularisation universel qui ne laisse personne derrière, comme on l'a déjà nommé plus tôt. Et sur le plan administratif, un programme, que ce soit une demande qui soit simple à formuler et peu coûteuse, encore une fois, dans l'idée que ce soit réellement accessible à toutes les personnes qui en ont besoin actuellement. C'est donc impératif que le Canada permette et facilite que toutes ces personnes qui sont précarisées à l'extrême et dont on a eu des témoignages tout à l'heure, obtiennent un statut de résident permanent et puissent enfin exercer leurs droits les plus fondamentaux. Alors, merci et bravo pour le courage et la persévérance aussi des personnes sans statut qui militent en ce moment pour ça. Merci.
And welcome back to Labor Radio here on CQT 90.3 FM. And we were just listening to voices from on the ground, from the struggles of migrant workers fighting for mass regularization. And then that Pan-Canadian Day of Action on September the 18th. It was a great set of interviews. And I think really going to inspire people to really mobilize on September 18th to get the best and the largest amount of possible people regularized through this regularization program that will be announced at the end of the month by the Liberal government. But I think before we check out on Labor Radio, I mean, it's not indirectly a question of migrant workers, but a lot of migrants do work as, you know, delivery drivers, as Uber drivers and Uber Eats. And there's been, I guess, some new light about the UFCW and Uber deal that Stefan wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, we actually covered this story about 6 months ago or so, when UFCW came out that they were in some kind of partnership with Uber. Obviously, they hadn't registered a union because their Uber drivers are not considered workers; they're considered private contractors. And anyways, recently it was revealed through FOIA requests that Uber and UFCW were jointly lobbying the Ontarian government against legislating in favor of Uber drivers and basically of gig workers to be classified as workers, employees, quote unquote, rather than private contractors. So just real shady behavior on behalf of UFCW, TUAC in Quebec, if people are wondering about the Quebec name of the union. But anyway, this information came out. UFCW basically refused to comment. Just shady and, I mean, just terrible. There's been so much work, not just in Ontario, but all around the freaking world, of gig workers trying to resist this misclassification so that they can defend their rights as workers better. And then this union just going in full bore with Uber against it. And actually, the story does mention that Teamsters has done a similar thing in the US, and I think another international union as well. But anyway, just a crappy update from a somewhat unimpressive union.
And it sort of, it confirms, and you know, like, if people thought there was any doubts of why, you know, why would Uber accept such a deal with UFCW, well, here you go, right? that their strategies are clear, right? If they don't think they can stop unionization, then they'll get a union that will stop real unionization. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but the effects are obviously far greater than just Uber. You know, they affect all gig workers. And so anyway, it's a terrible situation. But maybe we'll touch on that on a future episode. I don't know. Just wanted to put that in as a kind of update on a previous story we'd covered. Because we're pretty much out of time. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. And remember, you can catch us on the Labor Radio Network, podcast network of Labor Radio. You can also check us out on our Mixcloud and on the Facebook page. And we'll be with you on the third week of October. Thanks everyone for listening to Labor Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hotel the Blues, you're on 90.3 CKUT FM. To get tonight.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock, 6:01 actually. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional student and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jujage in the Ganiagahaga tradition and Muniang in the Anishinaabe tradition, and where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah Day, and I am live from the CKUT studios on University at the McGill campus for the very first time since roughly March 12th, 2020. Now, I've been coming to CKUT studio on a pretty much weekly basis, sometimes twice a week, since for years now, since about